I'm Scully, and I'm here with Leanne Grapes and Jeremy Rowley, and they're from Better Wyoming, which is an organization that actually I will let you go ahead and take.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks for having us, Scully.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. So Better Wyoming began about 4 years ago, and Better Wyoming started as kind of a response to all of the overwhelming messages that come from the conservative side in Wyoming. We knew that there were a lot more folks who had more to say, but didn't feel empowered to make their voices heard. So that's what we try to do, is empower everyday Wyomingites to hold our legislators accountable and to create a better democracy in Wyoming.
Can you tell us about the transition that y'all had? Because you were also, there's another organization, Forward Wyoming, that I think was a little bit more involved with Wyoming Promise, but Better Wyoming and Forward Wyoming, good organizations.
Yeah.
They merged.
Yeah. So Forward Wyoming also got started about 4-ish years ago. I was actually the founding executive director of Forward Wyoming, and just in the past couple of months, our two staff team of Forward Wyoming joined the two staff team of Better Wyoming to try to create an organization that was a more powerful kind of 1-2 punch for communications and organizing in Wyoming. Better Wyoming has had an awesome kind of history of doing really tough reporting on legislation in Wyoming. What Forward Wyoming was working on is empowering millennial voters in Wyoming. So we just came off of the Why We Vote Millennial Voter Project. We saw a doubly high turnout among people 18 to 24 in Albany County this last year. And we know that we talked with thousands of young people in Wyoming. We shared information about their polling places, about who is eligible to vote and how. And we also shared information about all the folks that were on our local ballot so that younger people could make more educated choices when they went to go vote this year. And it seems like people just want information. And so we have a really big focus on, you know, trying to empower people through knowledge. And yeah, so now we build this voter mobilization work into our advocacy work as well. So keep an eye out for that in the coming few months. It'll be starting up again for sure.
Yeah, I have also seen a lot of people outreaching for the need of information, myself included. Like, I don't feel like I can make a good choice in candidates that are available to me. So it feels like choosing the lesser of two evils. And so I'm looking forward to hearing more about the information, because if people are more informed, that also to me means that candidates have to be acting better.
Exactly.
If they're held more to a higher standard of accountability.
If legislators realize that there are more folks out there paying attention and planning to vote accordingly than they're typically used to. I mean, our state legislature is actually very representative of most of the people who vote. Mm-hmm. So what do we do to change what our legislature does and how it acts? Is we have to change who are the people that are voting.
Who are making that decision.
Yeah, and there's only, like, on a good year, we have about 45% of people in Wyoming voting who are eligible. So a huge portion of that is people under 35, mm-hmm. and that's where we think there's a lot of power.
Then what you've told me, Jeremy, I get the sense that the bulk of what Better Wyoming does is, and Leanne, you've just told me about specific things, but I spoke with Jeremy before the interview and got the sense that what Better Wyoming does is connect Wyomingites with fellow Wyomingites and use those connections to help Wyoming as a community come together to support good legislation and fight bad legislation and build those relationships between constituents and legislators that are supposed to be representing us, and specifically connecting Wyomingites who haven't felt like they had a voice before. Can you tell me a bit more about what other things you do? So you just came off of the voter initiative. What else do you guys do?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of work just trying to, again, inform people. I know that I was one of those young people that during the Why We Vote project and everything, I was like glued to my computer for hours on end, like trying to learn about the legislators. And I think now that I am a field organizer for Better Wyoming, one of the big things that I'm trying to do is share information about how not only you can vote for your legislators, but you can still keep them in check and you can make sure that they're doing what you want them to be doing for you. So, you know, we provide a number of things. We're constantly trying to get people in contact with their legislators. Mm-hmm. You know, we do that through phone banks where we get a group of people, a group of volunteers together to get in contact with, you know, target districts. you know, with regards to specific legislation or specific legislators, you know, thanking legislators if they're doing stuff that we think is good, and letting them know when there's stuff that we think isn't as good. And those are really exciting. And then we also have these citizen lobby days that are really exciting that occur over in Cheyenne when the legislative session is in session. And they basically, we work to mobilize citizens to get them to attend the legislative session, have, you know, one-on-one conversations with their local legislators, specific issues or pieces of legislation. And we provide a lot of opportunities for people to learn how they can get involved and make change here in Wyoming.
Yeah, and I know your website, betterwyo.org, so betterwyo.org. You have a really easy to navigate series of pages that tells people what kind of bills you're looking at, what kind of legislation you're looking at. And if you're not the kind of person who shows up for those lobby days or you know, doesn't have the time to do that or finds the thought of interacting with that many other people to be incredibly anxiety inducing, there's a number of reasons why you can't come out to that kind of event. But there's also still ways that you can contact your legislator, and you have a really great letter to your legislator section where you can go on and I found out who my legislator is, Glenn Moniz, where I urged him to support like House Bill 230, the non-discrimination ordinance for LGBTQIA plus people. And that's one focus of your attention right now, that you're serving a support capacity to another organization for that.
Right. Yeah. Wyoming Equality is just a fantastic nonprofit based out of Cheyenne. They are one of the oldest advocacy nonprofits in Wyoming, and they do amazing work. So through Better Wyoming, we really aren't trying to recreate the wheel. We want to provide support to great organizations who we share a mission with. So now we have hopefully an interim committee topic coming up. That means that we'll be able to talk about non-discrimination. And when I say we, I guess I mean our legislators will be able to keep the conversation about non-discrimination going throughout the session. But that is one thing at the moment that through our website at betterwyo.org/non-discrimination-now. That's the homepage for our LGBTQ plus non-discrimination campaign. And there you can use the form to write your legislators and ask them to support non-discrimination as an interim committee topic. That just means that issue gets assigned to a committee and they have to talk about it over the next 10 months till they reconvene. So that's something that folks can do right now without having to interact with anybody, being able to do it on your own time.
Yeah, whenever you can fit. Yeah. I did it in 5 minutes in between trying to make dinner to go to work.
This legislative session, we kind of had three main focuses. Non-discrimination was one of them. Common sense cannabis reform is one of our other main campaigns. We're really excited to see House Bill 171 get passed by the legislature. It's just waiting for a signature from the governor, but it would bring funding for hemp farming into Wyoming, and it would make all hemp products legal in Wyoming, including CBD. That means the topical oils, salves, all of that would now be accessible in Wyoming. That's something that we're really hoping to be able to continue discussing in the interim as well. Our other main focus this session was on education funding for public schools, especially early childhood education is really what we want to get towards. But for now, we're really stuck kind of focusing on trying to get the legislators to stop cutting funding for public schools. You know how it goes when the economy is a little slower. What's one of the first things to get cut is our public schools. But luckily, we have a constitutional mandate to fully fund public education in Wyoming. So it's really holding our legislators accountable for that. Yep. So hopefully that will be something we get to discuss in the interim as well. There's a big box corporate income tax that is hopefully going to be a interim committee topic, which would bring in about $45 million a year for public schools in Wyoming. So there's hope. We've got to focus on that new money for schools since so much has been cut, about $100 million in the last 3 years.
Yeah. Well, I'm speaking of cannabis, like common sense cannabis reform, thinking to the millions of dollars that Colorado has been able to invest in their schools within months of legalizing cannabis.
Right.
So I think we could be making better decisions than we are currently making.
So much of it is interconnected, you know, and As we look past the legislative session, there's two other issues that are part of our core platform, and that's public lands and tax reform and wealth inequality. So that's kind of big picture. You start looking at how things are connected. I mean, taxes are not sexy, but it's something that Wyoming really needs to address.
Yeah, well, and your website also, I noticed an extensive catalog of those kinds of issues, including your State of Insecurity series, where you go into the very specific details of the things that are happening to Wyomingites, the people who are working so many different jobs at once and still not being able to survive and being denied Medicare and having that huge gap of people who are lost in our healthcare system at the moment, who are not getting adequate care. So I deeply appreciate the work that y'all do.
I think holding spaces like this is so important to the future of progressive politics in Wyoming, because like we've kind of all talked about, one of the biggest issues that we have is so many people feel like their voice doesn't matter and that they're not heard and that they are kind of alone in thinking that maybe Wyoming could do a little better in this way or that way. And so to have places to bring people together, to be able to have, like, spark more of these conversations happening within our community, because, you know, we live in a democracy. It should function well, but when it's not, like it is right now, we all have equal power in turning that around and creating something that is a healthier democracy that helps us shape a better future. So what I just love about these conversations is hearing people's stories, seeing the humanity in our neighbors, and realizing that maybe there's people out there that really seem to have like a hold on the power that's governing us right now. But as the people, as a community, we can find ways to come together to change that and to shape that. But it requires all of us like supporting each other and, you know, finding some peace in our differences, but seeing a bigger picture of like, what is this vision that we want to work towards?
And you said that we each have an equal, like we have equal power in making these choices. That also makes me think of people like with disabilities who can't make it to voting, to the polls, and with physical illnesses and mental illnesses and things, who have legitimate barriers to gaining access to that power. Is there anything that Better Wyoming is thinking of in those terms?
I'll speak from my experience working on the Why We Vote project, in that I met a lot of folks who face some of these like bigger barriers, things that would inhibit the access that they had to voting. And so much of it there also has to be education. It has to be educating if they have, you know, if there are caretakers of, you know, folks who have a disability and aren't able to, you know, seek this information on their own. We need to be educating those people about how they empower their clients. We need to make it like super well known, all of the many different ways that we have to go vote, whether it's by mail. We have 40 days of early voting before every election. We actually have like great accessibility laws in Wyoming around voting, but it's just not well advertised. Like people who hold the power in our local governments are not always being very vocal, like trying to be more inclusive when it comes to voting. So I think one thing to start with is at least trying to get the information out about how things are now. There's ways that it can be better, absolutely. I say all the way vote by mail across the whole state. It's worked great for Colorado and Oregon. Okay. We have an amazing team with the county clerk's office here in Albany County. I would just have to say shout out to Jackie Gonzalez. She's awesome. So yeah, here in Wyoming, I know in Albany County and Laramie County both, you can go online to request an absentee ballot. An absentee ballot is a ballot that you don't fill out on election day. We have, obviously, on election day, you can go to your polling place, fill out a ballot there. Other than that, you can request an absentee ballot to be mailed to you. You can go to your county clerk's office 40 days up to election day, and you can just vote there during their office hours. So that can be a little difficult, right? Like a lot of people aren't available for public testimony or for, you know, a lot of things during business hours, but you do have 40 days. So yeah, you can request one online over the phone or go to the county clerk's office 40 days before the election.
Okay.
And I think speaking to barriers, there can also be sort of a barrier of fear. You know, I know that at least for myself as a, you know, as a brown genderqueer person with pink hair, like walking into the legislature, like even though I was, you know, I was doing it for my job, it still was scary. It was a weird, I felt very out of place, and it's very easy to feel out of place. And I think joining with other organizations and finding people that have similar views or similar just by nature, I think is really beneficial. It's really beneficial to, there's strength in numbers,
exactly.
I guess. And it's really empowering to show up with a group of people rather than just showing up by yourself, sort of waving your own flag. It's still very important, but it's a lot scarier to do it by yourself.
In terms of safe spaces to create the kind of coalitions that we're wanting to build, are you trying to make accommodations to make sure that things are accessible to people with disabilities?
I would say over the last year or so, I feel like there have been a lot more conversations about this within our own organization and in other organizations that I've, you know, been able to be a part of. And so I am glad that this is something that we talk about now, you know? I think that there's a lot of room for growth in this area, in that when you get talking about politics, I feel like it can be very alienating in ways that people aren't always expressing also. But I would love to hear ideas as this all grows, you know? But we do try to make sure that any place where we're asking public to meet is accessible to wheelchairs, that we all introduce ourselves. And so, you know, kind of take away some of the veil of the weirdness of just meeting with strangers and talking about very personal beliefs. So to try to just create more of a humanistic connection between people that are in our spaces is an important place to start for us. And being ready to listen and ready to hear feedback and ready to grow and know that this is all for the mission that we're working towards. I think that's a really important piece of a lot of this, is trying to keep out some of the ego of, you know, self-serving politics. So that's where we're trying to start from. And I hope that we are able to grow and be always more inclusive as we go. And we are a non-partisan organization, so that goes something to be said. We aren't out there about certain political candidates, and being nonpartisan, we do attract more people from kind of a broader swath of the spectrum than if we were kind of identified as one particular party, I think. And so I think that that's a cool space that we kind of exist in, that obviously we are for progressive policies that move Wyoming forward, but we are also out there for this greater mission of serving, you know, young people, working families, the people that are not being represented right now. We're out there for them.
Anybody that wants to get involved with any of our three campaigns, LGBTQ plus non-discrimination, common sense cannabis reform, and public school funding, anybody that wants to get involved in those campaigns, we've also got a new text banking service that's really cool that Leanne knows a whole bunch about.
We're just getting started on it, but it sounds like we're the only group in Wyoming that is using peer-to-peer texting. So
I get
literally
texts from Bernie.
Okay, cool. Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of the presidential campaigns are using it, and we're hoping to be the first nonprofit to use it in Wyoming. So that's literally happening like now.
Big news.
But if any of our supporters out there get a text from us in the next week or so, you know, we're trying to meet people where they're at. It's so much of the work, right? Like, we know it's all about education, inclusivity, like feeling like you're part of something. And people just want to, like, get the information from a point that, you know, they're able to digest it. And so if anyone is interested in any of these actions, you can just reach me at Leanne, L-E-E-A-N-N, at betteryo.org.
We're having a little bit of a side conversation and realized that I think we need to add a little bit more to this interview, specifically talking about, so voter outreach and education and all of those things are super crucial and important. And also, Leanne had spoken to the fact that we also need a candidate base that is palatable, that is actually going to enact progressive reform and progressive change. But And then I responded with someone like Charlie Hardy, who ran as an independent first and then as a Republican later, and has also, I believe, tried Democrat. I can't remember the order, but he's run so many different times under so many different hats and different parties and never been able to get... He mobilized a huge base of youth in particular and people who felt otherwise unrepresented, and he's never been able to make it into Senate. There's actually a documentary about him, Charlie vs. Goliath, and it mentions the other thing that we had not been mentioning in this interview, which is corporate interests and money, and specifically just money. Mm-hmm. And the fact that our money is speech. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't have the same kind of speech capacity as others.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then you even look at like our local level politics and you see money there also in kind of a different light. Like we talk about a lot, our state legislators get like a daily stipend. Mm-hmm. They have a little money to kind of keep them afloat from the day to day, but otherwise in our legislators are not paid in any meaningful sense, which really limits the ability for everyday Wyomingites to run, you know, because you need the money for your campaign, like you talk about, and then to actually hold the office. Who here in this room can just take 2 months off of work to go live in Cheyenne and, you know, do the legislation for 2 months, but basically unpaid, right? No one. That's why we have old white men who are, you know, ranchers or wealthy lawyers, and they have the flexibility and money to be able to float them as candidates and legislators. So I think that's one thing we need to do is figure out how to pay our state legislators so that more young people, more students, more folks who have
working
an interest in
people.
Yeah, working people can participate in our citizen legislature. Mm-hmm. You know?
Just a wider variety of voices would be really, really nice.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, yeah. So like, so education, super important. Being able to get out there and vote or do whatever you need to do to have your voice heard in that electoral politics. And then also, let's maybe not have speech equal money. Like, let's maybe undo that Citizens United kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where corporations are now people and they have so much more say. So that when you have candidates in our legislation, they come from mm-hmm. money, or they are supported by people with money.
Mm-hmm.
So if our current incumbents don't like you, they can put a lot of money in suppressing you or putting out attack ads. They are something that people can spend millions of dollars in when they have the money to
mm-hmm.
do so. And that is a speech that gets amplified a lot more than what you're trying to do, because
right.
you don't have millions of dollars to put in advertisements.
I wish.
Part of the information and the education initiative is also in counteracting money.
Yeah, looking at some of these systems that
mm-hmm.
are really the overarching things that are shaping the way our politics are. And yeah, money and politics, absolutely something that is for sure there. It's there, and it really creates barriers for a lot of people.
Hey everybody, it's Matt here, and last week I got to interview my friend, the Reverend Odette Fulbright Folsom. Most people know her as Reverend Fulbright. She's a Unitarian Universalist minister, and for around 3 years, Reverend Fulbright was minister of the Cheyenne Unitarian Church here in Wyoming, and was a leading progressive voice in Wyoming. And in 2013, and this is something many of you will remember, in 2013, Reverend Fulbright wrote a letter to all the state legislators about guns and a bill that would have allowed concealed carry in schools. How quaint that debate seems in retrospect, but Reverend Fulbright was not quaint or quiet. And in the letter, she wrote, "I am writing to express my grave concern about House Bill 105. Ample evidence has shown that schools and guns do not mix, and in particular, guns in the hands of amateurs, non-professionals, is extremely dangerous." And that letter pissed off Hans Hunt, a representative from Newcastle, and he wrote back. He actually wrote back to Odette, and he said, I'll be blunt. If you don't like the political atmosphere of Wyoming, then by all means leave. We who have been here for a very long time, I am proudly fourth generation, are quite proud of our independent heritage. And this made national attention because people were like, that's kind of fucked up. And so that's how I first learned of the remarkable Odette Fulbright. And sad for us and great for her, she and her family finally escaped to New York and back to the East Coast from whence she came. And she is now one of the ministers at All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City. And I produce Odette's podcast, which is called Reverence Road, which is a podcast out of All Souls there in New York City. So I was doing a longer interview with her about civil disobedience and demonstrations at the border on current immigration policy, which you'll hear very soon on our podcast, Cowboys on the Commons. But I also wanted to talk to her about her experience in Wyoming, and I wanted to tack it onto this podcast, Solidarity Wyoming.
I'm Odette Fulbright Fulson. Right now, I serve as the associate minister at the Unitarian Church of All Souls in New York City. I am in almost my 20th year of ministry, so I've served congregations throughout the South and then a little while out your way. I was in Cheyenne, Wyoming prior to coming to New York City.
You also host a really fine podcast called Reverence Road, in which you interview just some of the fantastic, really like kind of amazing people, people with amazing lives in your congregation there.
It is a true joy. And it's possible because I have this amazing producer named Matt Stannard, and he makes my work pop and come together in the end. And I'm really grateful for that.
Of course, everybody, you know, remembers you. And I want, so I wanted to ask for a little bit of retrospective. You've been away from our fine state for what? Is it 2 years now?
Not quite 2 years, but almost.
Yeah. And I personally feel bad because I had been away for a couple of years and was just getting back when you left. So, or was just settling back in when it was time for you to leave. So I didn't get a chance to work alongside you. And I think it would have been a good time. And the first time I heard about you was when you had your run-in with what was his name?
You're gonna ask me his name, and I've totally forgotten it. That's funny. Hans Hunt.
Hans Hunt. That's right.
Right.
That was my first encounter with you, It went viral. Surely you don't want to be defined, or you don't want your time in Wyoming to be defined by one experience. But it really, you know, to me, it like captured, I think, the, you know, people talk about how friendly it is here and how everybody gets along and that's the way we do things and everything. But it seems like they only talk about that when the left tries to make noise. And it seems like when the left does try to make noise, or when people do try to make noise here, they get shut down in that very toxic masculine way that you got shut down. And so that was my first, my first knowledge of you as a person just was one in which I had tremendous respect and empathy for what you were dealing with at that time. How does that look or feel now that you're in such a different place?
It actually is one of the moments that ended up working really well. And I think it was something about Wyoming that made that true. So let me explain myself. So that happened very soon after I had arrived. And what happened as a result of that is that folks who would not have had any reason to know about me, or more importantly about the congregation in Cheyenne, suddenly became aware. And because it was on this gun issue, which of course in Wyoming is, I say of course, I don't see why this should be true, but it is. So there has been so much assumption that everybody is on the same page and, guns, guns, guns all the time. We love our guns. Was assumed what happened very quickly and clearly was that people who were very afraid to comment on this and yet felt strongly about the issue of some forms of gun control reached out to me and showed up at the church. And a few people who I might not have met for a while. I know I would have met Roger McDaniel, for example, fairly soon, and maybe I had already met him at the time, but of course he wrote about it fairly quickly. But others in the community spoke up and said, yeah, look at how this works, just the way you name it. Like, look at them trying to shut her down, and look at the, you know, this careless cruelty with mm-hmm. which a lawmaker chooses to respond to the comments of a constituent of some sort. I had written to everyone.
Sure.
And so it was good because it lifted the issue up, and people that it might have taken me a lot longer to get to know, I got to know a lot sooner. And people who cared about this issue but didn't feel safe enough to respond knew there was a space and a person and a place perhaps where they could come and be among people who it would be safe to have these conversations. So there were many, many, many good things about it, actually, as mm-hmm. it went along. The thing about being there, it was only and always the people that both brought me there and kept me there. The ministry that we were trying to do kept me there as well. But if it had not been for the fact that you can know and connect with remarkable people very quickly in Wyoming, especially in Cheyenne, you know, because people are coming to do the politicking there. So they're coming from all over the state. There's no way I could have survived 5 years there, but that is the saving grace of it. And there were those moments of what felt like remarkably personal achievements. I don't mean personal as to me, but rather personal to the communities that I love and care about. And there are people, for example, like yourself, like Sarah Burlingame, whose leadership and indefatigable ability to show up and do things was very rich and exciting, and it just made you feel so intimately a part of things. That is easy to miss. I left shortly after the 2016 election, in which so many of the people that I loved were swept. The very, very few Democrats that were serving were kind of swept out of office, with the exception of people like Kathy Connolly, I think. And that was just so heartbreaking. And that's sort of the note on which I left. So if you want to tell me about things that are great that you love, sure. I'd love to hear them.
Well, just to make a long story short, I think that the legislature continues to struggle, and it is, I think people are increasingly frustrated because the good people who are there have too many hats to wear and they can't stop. It's like, you know, it's like running around a sinking ship and trying to patch it, but they're doing the best they can. But that's not where I think the best stuff is happening. The best stuff to me has been happening in terms of social movements here, and in particular, the rise of Juntos as a leadership organization that has been at the forefront of the struggle against ICE activity here and against the building of an ICE facility, a private facility that would be licensed to ICE. And there was, to try to make a long story short, there was this effort to get bids to do this in Evanston, to build this facility in Evanston. And suddenly there was this amazingly managed statewide movement against it, led by Latinx activists and also by the ACLU. And similarly, you know, we've had a couple of good local elections around the state, including the election of a Native American woman, you know, representing the Riverton area, who's very progressive, and I think a pushback. It might not, the magnitude of that pushback might look small to outsiders, but what seems different? Oh, and the rise of a DSA chapter here, which is huge. And while the DSA chapter was busy working on rising in the southeast portion of the state, this revolutionary socialist organization pops up in other parts of the state, which are, you know, literally just these sort of left refugees in Casper and in other, you know, smaller towns, just reaching out to one another and kind of going, you know, we need to do something, and completely independent of the rest of the political machinations in the state. I've been here the better part of 20 years, and I've never seen so many different groups rising up, from liberal groups to more radical groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exciting. And that's what's so uniquely possible in a place that has just over 500,000 people, right? Mm-hmm. And it is it makes it exciting, because I think if some of that success continues and there's even more unification among groups that can make a difference, it also becomes a model for other places, larger places that would have to do a lot more work to know each other or connect. Before we move away from it, I will say, you know, another thing about my sojourn in Wyoming was that I learned how to work directly with the FBI, which was not something I'd had the occasion to do before Wyoming. So yeah, I just want to agree that there's both the beauty, the immediacy, there's the sense of people wearing those multiple hats, and there's the risk factors. And so that is something that I carry in my heart when I think about people who are working in Wyoming and everywhere else, frankly. How has it been? Well, we love New York. I think it's fair to say that, first of all, it's absolutely fair to say that I'm an East Coaster. And when I say that, I'm not necessarily referencing, you know, a certain coastal eliteness. What I mean instead is that the land and the landscape, the mountains and the oceans, the trees, especially deciduous trees and the red soils and things like that, are very much what I need. Like, I thrive there, and I was most alienated in Wyoming by the landscape, the geography, and the land itself was very hostile terrain to my spirit. So that was a hardship. And being back on the East Coast, even in New York City, which I think people who don't live here don't realize actually is super green, and there are like a jillion gardens and parks that you're never far from a park. And so that's been glorious. And, you know, you can go up and down the coast here, and it's familiar terrain for my spirit. So in addition to everything that living in New York brings to one, more generally, there's just sort of being home for me. And I am closer literally to my family, both my daughter and son-in-law, and then my grandparents, who, you know, they're my grandparents. I'm not going to go on record right now with how old I am, but they're my grandparents, and they are doing well, but not perfectly. And I'm closer to my dad and his wife and things like that. So all of those are fabulous. I could then jump into ministry, but
what has going back to, you know, this big, larger congregation taught you or made you think about in terms of smaller congregations and what small progressive congregations in states like ours might need?
The way that, you know, you talked about the leaders there, the political leaders having to wear too many hats. I think that is something that's very true in the smaller, even to mid-sized congregations, is that the people who are most engaged often are wearing too many hats. And a large congregation can spread that out. But reality for large congregations is that there are dozens and dozens of small congregations, you know, they center around different interests and ways of being together, because that's how human community works. Mm-hmm. So really, when you're working with a large congregation, you're working with lots and lots and lots of small congregations within it. That's the main takeaway here. But other than that, you still have the same kinds of challenges. How do we as a congregation both understand our own identity and then live into service and try to focus on a few areas where we would like to work together to make a difference? in the large congregation, as is often the case in the small congregation, you have a lot of people with a lot of very important interests that they have personally that the larger community may not be engaged with, you know, or two or three people want to do immigration and two or three people want to do prison reform and two or three people want to do environmental concerns. And then they get frustrated that they're not generating energy together, right? So the struggles actually are quite similar in, I think, human community life as anywhere else.
Well, it's nice to know that you're back where it's wet and where there's dirt, you know, real dirt and soil and all of that stuff, because I from being from California, I feel the same way often. And, you know, what lands you in places is sometimes so serendipitous. I think that's definitely the case as to why this is where I'm spending my life. But I am also a coastal person. It's the opposite coast, but I get you.
Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference. And let me just twist that back towards the work that we're talking about. I do think that there are so many ways that people need to be sustained so that they can do work. And depending on who you are, the land itself, or what you like to do on the earth, you know, I like to climb mountains, or I like to swim, or I like to pick wildflowers, whatever it might be. If that thing is not available to you, it can make actually a big difference in your sustainability in the hard work of change and the struggle for survival in many cases that our communities are facing when, you know, looking at an increasingly oppressive government. So we shouldn't underestimate that. And I was always aware, for example, in Wyoming, that so many people who were there, especially people, if they had moved from somewhere else, it was in fact not just the people and communities they encountered or the work that they were doing, but also the physical place. They found it beautiful. They wanted to be there, and it itself is sustaining to them. So these things are often underestimated, I think, in our experience and in our concept of work that we're doing together.
I think that's very important, and it also circles back to what motivates, I think, folks that you would generally describe as on the left here or left of center here is also a feeling of that the beauty of this place and the uniqueness of this place should kind of belong to everybody. And I think that's one of the things that folks, that a lot of really common folks across the board in Wyoming have been pushing back against with some effectiveness.
Yeah. And it's those things that once they begin to work, first of all, once they begin to recognize that there's a challenge or the nature of some of those challenges, and they work with other people in the community, you've built those relationships, and should something else or different occur, it's more likely that you can reach out to those people who had traditionally been on the sidelines or not felt themselves personally engaged. I mean, it's amazing how that can cascade and have a increasingly beneficial effect on the different challenges that face a community like Wyoming.
You know, I certainly hope that something or another might bring you back here at some point. We would have quite a few good times around it, I think.
Excellent. And I'm keeping a close watch on everything that, at least that you're saying publicly about the project, the co-op and everything. So just on a personal note, I hope that continues to maybe lean in a really good direction and you get more people whose communal values really align.
It's such a cliche, but it's been the best of times and the worst of times. Personal level, it has given me the space to do more important work, and that feels great. And then I think the sacrifices that those of us in sort of the core of the organization are making might not be sustainable long term. And so that's the, you know, that's the paradox, right? Is, you know, that in order to create things like this that are ideally to scale a level of communal living, initially requires often a lot of self-sacrifice on a small number of people's parts. And so that's really the existential question for us, is how we can sustain that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.